Welcome to Journals of a Healer, Unleash Your Hidden Genius. As we think about the great aspects of ourselves that we haven't even touched in, sometimes there's a little confusion about the difference between spiritual and professional and being on time and time management and everything. Well, I'm great. I'm a spiritual person, so I can't be bothered with all that. And it doesn't seem to work very well for us. And it doesn't seem to work very well that we are facing a big chasm between spiritual and professional. And my goodness, I have found someone so special that can just bridge that gap for us that I can't wait for you to hear about it. So I'm welcoming right away Kathleen Hawkins, and I'm just excited for you to speak with her. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Mary. This will be fun.
Yeah, I was just thinking, my goodness, you have such credentials. Could you tell us a little bit about the various hats you're wearing right now in time and this time and space?
Oh, my goodness. it might help if I kind of told you about how I evolved. I didn't sit down and write Spirit Incorporated, and so I kind of evolved into my understanding of spirituality.
I'm sure you didn't grow up. I mean, what was it like being a child, Kathleen?
Oh,
a child.
Well, fasten your seatbelts. It could be a bumpy ride.
Okay.
Well, my parents, when I was growing up, had two very different worldviews. My father tended to be a little pessimistic and cautious and nervous, and I had people tell me that he had a good sense of humor, but I rarely saw that at home. He had what some people would call a grim profession. He was a mortician. And he was a freelance mortician. And people gasp, they go, "What do you mean, freelance?" Well, what he did was, he worked for 22 different funeral homes in the Detroit area. And the funeral homes, rather than keep someone on staff all the time, they just called him when they would have work. And so he worked for about 22 different funeral homes. That way they saved money, the funeral homes, because they didn't have to pay someone all the time. And my dad had all the work that he could handle. And so he insisted that they call him in the middle of the night if they got work, and so he was pretty sleep deprived a lot, and and being in that profession, he saw the results of, you know, crime and human error and all that, and he was so afraid that his children were going to do something, well, stupid, you know, and get themselves killed. And, well, that's part of the job description of a little kid, you know, because you're learning.
Yeah,
so
sure.
You're bound to do, you know, some kind of stupid things. But I think that was probably the root of my perfectionism, was his overprotectiveness and his anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, my mom had, I love this story. She was the daughter of one of the early Unity teachers. And when she was a little girl, I know. When she was a little girl, she and her sister were raised by their father. Their mom died when mom was 4, and her little sister was 3. And so her father took the girls, and they went to live on Joy Farm. And Joy Farm was an artist's retreat and a spiritual center. The woman who owned Joy Farm was a follower of Emma Curtis Hopkins, who was considered to be the creator and organizer of the New Thought movement. in the United States.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm the granddaughter of one of the early Unity teachers, which I love that idea. And so my mom was very artistic, and she had this spiritual background. And my dad, on the other hand, was very cautious and often anxious. And my mom, when I was a little kid, she helped foster a love of reading and writing in me, because I would tell her stories before I knew how to read or write. She would write them down and then read them back to me. And I thought, that is so cool. I can read, or people can read what I said a whole week later, you know. And that was about the, as far ahead as I could see, it was like a week.
Oh, I know. I know. I mean, time is very elastic. It's amazing.
Yeah.
When you're young, it's forever and a half, you know.
I know. But I was just enthralled with the idea of seeing words written down, and I had said them.
Mm.
And Mom loved to read me fairy stories, and stories about kings and queens and princes and princesses and castles.
Oh.
So it was it was kind of strange, because we lived in funeral homes. I lived in three different funeral homes before I was six. And so we would sit in the apartment above the funeral home, and Mom would read all this fantasy stuff to me. And so as a child, I sort of felt like I was suspended between the grim and the impossible. And kind of had to make my way. And my love of writing just stayed with me. And I went to college. I got a degree, a master's degree in reading education. And I was teaching school in Michigan. And I taught school for 2 years, and I thought, you know what? I have always wanted to be a writer. In fact, I consider myself to be a writer. And why don't I just give this a go and see where it takes me? So I applied to San Francisco State University to their creative writing master's degree program, and at the time, they were only taking 1/8 of the applicants, and I got in. And so I thought, this is my opportunity now to see if I can really make a go of being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit my teaching job in Michigan, drove cross-country to San Francisco. I didn't have an apartment or a job or friends or a support system. All I had was the acceptance. You know, we are happy to inform you that you are, you know, we've accepted you into the program. So I moved there, and it was such a life-changing experience. And I started going to a religious science church, Science of Mind. And one day one of the ministers said, she said, I work in a detox center for alcoholics, and they are looking for an assistant to the general manager and the director of this alcoholism center, this detox center. Would you like to interview? So I thought, yes, I needed a job.
Sure.
And so I did, and that was another life-changing experience for me. And that was when I started looking at the whole idea of our jobs as possibly being an outpicturing of some of our inner beliefs. And, you know, the listeners probably will relate to this, because I considered my job basically I was assistant. I was typing and filing. And that was it. That was the extent of it. And I had two master's degrees and a teaching
credential. A little bit overqualified.
I know. And I told myself that every day. I said, you're overqualified. You're not living up to your potential. And I was dissatisfied. I was, you know, kind of unhappy.
Mm.
But the thing is I loved the people I worked with. And the people who came through the detox center were just fabulous. I mean, they had such stories. And I would have these really long coffee breaks where I would sit and just visit with these people who were sober for the first time in a long time. And at the same time, I had all this dissatisfaction. You know, I wasn't living up to my potential.
But nobody told you about on-the-job turning, huh?
All it was typing and filing, and I had been typing since I was in sixth grade. So,
But your on-the-job training was talking with those people, obviously.
Well, I wasn't even in training to be a therapist or a counselor or anything. I felt kind of guilty about having long coffee breaks because I would finish my typing and filing so fast. And then I would go sit in the cafeteria, and I would talk to people who had come in from detox. And one day I talked to my boss. I said, you know, I take kind of long coffee breaks. And he said, well, that's what you're here for, you know, to visit with people. This is the first time many of them have been sober, and was kind of practice for them. And I thought, gosh. I thought, but I didn't have any training as a counselor or a therapist. I wasn't even going to school for that. You know, I had a degree in creative writing. And so I started thinking, why am I working in a detox center when I'm not addicted to anything? And boy, light bulb moment. I realized that I was addicted to something. That was a belief in limitation. And I had been, you know, saying, oh, I can't find a teaching job. Well, I hadn't even looked. And then I thought, Kathleen, you know, who interviewed for this job? And I raised my hand. And I said, who agreed to this salary? And I raised my hand. And I started thinking, oh, my gosh. You know, might our jobs be outpicturing of some of our beliefs in, you know, prosperity and abundance?
Sure. A complete reflection of how we think.
It's kind of scary, isn't it? And
those breakthroughs usually are. It's an embarrassing and same time.
Oh, I know. I can admit it years later. And then I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go get another job, a real job, you know, that pays more and uses my credentials and all that. And I thought, but wait a minute, what if I am still in this addicted to belief in limitation state of mind? It might be that if I quit this job and I go to another job, I might find myself in the same circumstances. In fact, we had something at the detox center that we called the geographical cure. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it wasn't really a cure at all, but it was the kind of thinking that people have, or some people have, that if I just had a different job or a better set of friends, then everything would magically be great. And so the general director said, yeah, go ahead.
That you remind me of Abraham Lincoln. His brother wrote and asked him for a loan so he could move to another state. And he wrote back to him. He was going to buy a farm, and he said, you know, is the sun going to shine brighter in this other state? Are you going to be a different person? Are you you're going to lose everything that you have and have to buy new, or you'll move, or it'll cost so much money? And why don't you just figure out a way to do things better where you are? And he refused to lend him the money.
So what happened to his brother?
I have no idea. that was as much of the story as I got. I was fascinated with reading Abraham Lincoln's letter. There was nothing printed about his brother from there on. But
yeah, he just faded into obscurity or something. I didn't even know he had a brother. What we had, his brother, it sounds like he was looking for a geographical cure.
Exactly.
And in our detox center, we had a lot of people. Now, remember, we were on the West Coast. We had a lot of people from the East Coast in our detox center.
Mm-hmm.
And our sister company on the East Coast had a lot of people from the West Coast in their detox center.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, isn't that interesting, you know?
And
I started wondering, you know, if I go to another job, if I find a, quote, better job than this one, I'm still going to take my beliefs with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I made a promise to myself, I'm going to stay in this job here at this detox center, writing, you know, thank you notes and transcribing tapes and filing
mm-hmm.
information
mm-hmm.
away and then doing it all over again. I'm going to stay here until I understand myself in relation to this job.
Ah,
and
that's brilliant.
You know, I hear a lot of people, you know, they're out there just looking. They're saying, oh, I'm being a server in a restaurant, or I'm doing office work, or I'm doing some other kind of work that's not suited for me and all that. But
mm-hmm.
I thought, if we begin to, you know, if we go from job to job trying to find the right job, you know, we might always be looking. So I decided to stay in the job I had, understand myself
uh-huh.
in relation uh-huh. to it and to the responsibilities. And I looked at my job, and listeners might enjoy doing this because it's a fun exercise. I began to look at my job as a metaphor. And as I mentioned, you know, how was I in a detox center when I wasn't addicted? So I looked at the metaphor of addiction. And as I mentioned, I realized I was addicted to a belief in limitation. So
mm-hmm.
I sat down and I wrote an article called The Get By Job, because I thought of this job in the detox center as my get by job. It paid the bills, it kept yogurt on the table, and I'd been waiting for my real job to magically appear, even though I hadn't done much to look for it.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And so I just wanted to get some clarity.
And it's always a trap. It's a trap.
Like what? A trap?
That get by job is a trap.
Well, yeah, I felt like I was stuck there, but I realized
mm-hmm.
I really wasn't. And I thought, I'm just going to stop looking for my perfect job. And I wrote this article, The Get By Job, and I sent it to Science of Mind magazine.
Uh-huh.
And they wrote back and they said, we might be able to use this if it were written a little differently. Well, I thought, you know, maybe that was kind of a polite brush off, so I didn't do anything for a month. And I thought, well, you know, maybe they're serious. And so I rewrote it and it was in the magazine.
Uh-huh.
And I was so excited, and that just started the ball rolling. I was looking at everything in business from a spiritual perspective. And I think that there's a spiritual foundation to anything that we do. Any circumstances in our lives have a spiritual foundation, and we just need to affirm that foundation. And things begin to come clear. And so what I did was, my next article was How to Gain Spiritual Insights at Work. because that's what I needed to do.
Uh-huh.
And I started looking at my job responsibilities, and they reflect something that I needed to know or learn. And surprisingly enough, I said, wait a minute, what are you typing and filing? Look at what you're typing and filing. I was typing and filing thank you notes. Thank you for your donation. Thank you for your contribution. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I thought, oh, when was the last time I thanked anybody for anything? Maybe this is a message that I need to start being more grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started thanking people, and I would write notes to people, and I started feeling better and better and better. And so I was in that job, in my get-by job, which was really a tremendous moment, turnaround moment, turning point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for 4 years.
Wow.
But I was so engaged in looking at every aspect of business and how to incorporate a spiritual perspective. And I was writing these articles for Science Mind magazine, and they published every one I sent. And I had, I had 14 articles published by them. And many of the articles were written, you know, doing office work in the detox center.
Yeah.
And then I realized, hey, I think I have a book here. So
mm-hmm.
I started pulling it together. And each article was the basis of a chapter for a book, which became Spirit Incorporated, How to Follow Your Spiritual Path from 9 to 5, Whatever Your Job, Faith, or Challenge. And then the most amazing thing happened. A friend of mine met someone who was starting a seminar company. And they were wondering if I wanted to teach for the seminar company. And I had a degree. You know, one of my master's degree was in reading education.
Uh-huh.
I was very interested in speed reading. And they said, could you teach speed reading in one day? And I said, oh, no. You know, it can't be done in one day. And then I thought about it, and I thought, and I said, wait a minute, I could do it. I could teach it in one day. So I was the first person in the country to teach speed reading in one day. And I started traveling all around the country. And I quit my, quote, get-by job, which was a turning point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on the road, you know, teaching speed reading courses first to the public, and then I started teaching in company classes. And it presented itself. You know, after I studied my relation to my job, in spiritual terms, and wrote this book, then this other job magically opened up, you know. And if I had quit the get-by job a year or two earlier, that ideal job would not have been there, because the man who started the seminar company hadn't started it yet.
Uh-huh.
So it's like the timing was perfect.
Mhm.
And then after
that,
I got a call from a magazine wanting me to write a column for them, and the name of the magazine was, are you ready? Success Magazine.
Wow.
And I thought,
they sought you.
They
sought you.
Yes, they did. And the other person, my friend, was teaching time management for this seminar company. And so he would teach time management, and I would teach speed reading. And someone took his time management course and said, would you write a book for us called Time Management Made Easy? Well, he had all the speaking engagements he wanted, So he asked me if I wanted to write the book. And so I wrote Time Management Made Easy. And then Success Magazine, Success came calling, literally. You know, there was a phone call. Hi, I am so-and-so at Success Magazine. Would you write an article? It started out as an article for us on time management. So I did, and then he called back. He said, what can you write for us next month? And next month, and next month. And it worked out, you know, to I worked for them for more than 5 years.
Wow.
So it was just amazing.
Credentials.
And I have, I don't know, I'm talking a lot.
Listen, this is perfect because what you're doing is you are sort of giving a roadmap that people can follow. You know, the one of the most brilliant women I've ever met was Jean Dalrymple, who was one of the founders and the major creative force behind City Center in New York City, which was the very first center for the arts here. And I arranged for her to do an address for AAUW, I think it was. And somebody asked her, how did you get to do all of these things? And she said, well, it was very simple. I just did what was in front of me. And what you are saying, I'm listening to this, and I'm reflecting all this against that comment, and I'm saying she did just exactly what was in front of her. And you
like
did
what
it so
appeared
well.
To her to do what appeared to
what
her
was
to,
what was there. She did what was there. Whatever was there, she simply did it. And so did you. And the, and look at the success. This is tremendous.
I know.
I mean,
I think it helps to have a vision. You know, I knew I wanted to be a writer because I had been writing all my life. And I, as you say, she did what was in front of her. So I had this vision, and then I went step by step and just sort of had faith that everything would kind of be revealed to me in the perfect right timing. And, it, you know, talking to you today is a great opportunity for me just to sit and reflect on my life up till now. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's just all fits together. When I didn't know what I was doing, it just slowly began to present itself. And I have something here that on my desk. It was my grandfather's medallion, and I found it in my mother's jewelry box when I went there last. And it has Latin words on it, which I'm not going to attempt to pronounce. But translated, it says, to work is to pray.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And I just love that. And it was like this love letter from my grandfather from years and years and years ago. And that was the way he thought about work, you know, business, whatever kind of work we do, it's a way to pray. And I'm thinking, you know, you've heard pray without ceasing. And I thought, we all do. We all pray without ceasing. And for me, what that means is everything that we think, say, and do is an affirmation either for this indwelling spirit or against it. And when we are negative, it's an affirmation against, you know, the indwelling spirit.
Yes.
I mean, it's just profound. I love this. this medallion.
I do too. And, you know, I feel exactly the same way about meditation. People talk about sitting, closing themselves off in a special place and meditating for an hour a day or something like this. I meditate walking down, like ad hoc or you know, al fresco. I meditate walking down the street, falling into a flower, looking at the sun shining on a window. Anything that I'm doing, I'm feeling, you know, this is a form of meditation.
I know. I worked, that reminds me of something. I worked with a hospital group. They worked, you know, for this big hospital. And the subject of my presentation was Spirit Incorporated, How to Follow Your Spiritual Path from 9 to 5. And they said, well, this is really good. And everyone there was interested in the subject, which was nice. And they said, but we have emergencies. You know, literal emergencies.
Yes.
When you think about it, they do. I mean, I think of an emergency here in the office as, you know, nothing. But they have life and death emergencies.
When the printer breaks down or...
Yeah, which, by the way, mine did today.
You know? Oh,
dear. And so, you know, is it an inconvenience or is it a tragedy? That's one thing I try to remind myself if I'm feeling uptight. I say, okay, is this an inconvenience or is it a tragedy? So these people would have literal emergencies, and they said, we can't take time to just, you know, get centered and all that. And I said, well, I understand. And I said, how about a walking meditation? And it sounds to me, Mary, that's kind of like what you do is kind of a walking meditation.
Exactly.
I said, when you come to work.
Yeah,
from the parking lot walking into the hospital or on your way to lunch. You know, you can just walk slowly and maybe repeat a mantra or something that calms you down and centers you, like peace, poise, power. Peace, poise, power. Feels good when I say that. I'm going to say that again. Peace, poise, power. So, yeah, you don't have to, you know, close yourself off and light candles and all that, although that's certainly nice. But you said something earlier about how can you combine spirituality in business. You know, spirituality, most people think of it as a very personal, private thing, which it is. And, you know, business is public, often materialistic, has a reputation for being opportunistic and sometimes unethical. And so people have said, how can you combine something that is so beautiful with something that is like business? And I'm thinking, you know, if we are spiritual beings at the core of who we are, we can't check it at the door when we come in, you know, come into work. I'm reminded of that sign in the parking lot. It says, lock your car and hide your valuables. And our valuables.
Many people feel that way.
I know, but, you know, if we are spiritual beings at the core, we can't check our essence at the door when we come to work.
Absolutely.
So it's like at work we represent ourselves as spiritual beings or not. And I had one person say to me, well, I think that business trivializes spirituality. And I thought she had a good point, but I was thinking about that. And I thought, you know, it's real easy to feel spiritual when you're meditating or you're out in the woods or you're at church or temple or synagogue where everybody's on their best behavior. But it can be a real challenge and maybe even a greater test of our spiritual strength to stay positive and peaceful when things are kind of in turmoil around us.
Yes.
So, you know, our church is, we can think of as, you know, our office. The altar might be our desk. And the, quote, clergy might be an irate customer or boss or employee or colleague.
So,
you know, challenging experiences or difficult situations at work can be opportunities to act according to our highest beliefs. And in doing so, we might even help to raise the standards of business.
There you go. My special, my very special girl guide that I work with says that the obstacles and all of the challenges that we go through here on earth are our spiritual barbells.
That we only
grow through spiritually through working against resistance. Just as you work, if you're going to build up a muscle in a gym, you're going to have a barbell to lift it up or to something to resist against, or you will not get strong.
Boy, I like that.
So here,
does your spiritual guide help other people too? Could I borrow your spiritual guide?
She's been known to adopt some of my friends. Absolutely. Just call on Stardust.
Oh, okay. But what a great... I've never heard it put that way before, like the spiritual barbells. Wow. Well, is there a way that, can you think of an example in your life where you've done some heavy lifting and become more spiritually strong for it?
Oh, my. Many things.
There have been too many.
Way too many. I came in, frankly, I came in, as they say, overly anxious.
Into the world overly anxious?
Well, ambitious. With way too much on my plate to my agenda that I intended to do, and so therefore I had to go through a whole lot of stuff in order to get to the point where I could actually do anything, you know. But I've been almost homeless. I've been at a point physically where a doctor looked at me and said, no insurance. Well, no point in putting you in a hospital. Just run up all these bills for nothing, you know. So yeah.
Oh, wow. When was that? How long ago?
1966.
Oh my gosh! Well, you showed them.
I sure did.
They're probably not around anymore.
No, obviously. But yes, I had to literally take my health into my own hands because I finally realized the doctors couldn't fix me, so I had to fix myself. And
oh
I
my
did
gosh.
That. Yeah.
How can you give us a Reader's Digest version?
Well, I lived on antibiotics for about 30 years. And, you know, of course, in between, I'd have bronchitis about once a month because I'd had a broken nose, a little souvenir of my first marriage. And it grew back.
Barbell.
Wrong, and so, so every time, every time I got near any kind of an irritant, I would develop a huge sinus infection that would turn into bronchitis. Mm-hmm. So then in between, I'd have to have, I would have to have nystatin for the yeast infection that the bronchitis had created. And so I just went back and forth and back and forth, and my nightstand looked like a country pharmacy, you know. I started studying nutrition and supplements and vitamins and all that kind of thing. And then I found out, somebody told me, well, you know, you can't get the good stuff from the health food stores. You have to go to, where do you get it? You have to go to a private distributor. So then I went through about a 20-year education discovering what worked and what didn't work, and I finally got to the point where I haven't been sick in years. I have a friend who knows me 20 years.
Wow.
She knows I was sick one time.
Wow.
In 20
wow.
years.
Wow, so
it's
sort of an unfolding, evolving.
Well, yeah.
You
came to. Yeah, well, this is what, you know, I call it on-the-job training, you know. And I learned, I taught myself, I took everything that I could get from other people and then applied it and found some things worked and some things didn't work, and things worked for one person that didn't work for the other person. And, you know, and here I am now. I'm so healthy that it's almost embarrassing. You know.
Oh. Wow. Fantastic. Well, you know, when, in my experience, like things, I look for the spiritual influences in experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, I have several spiritual influences. And these are what have helped me. I'll just say very quickly, unity, you know, there's a larger reality, kind of a universal energy behind and within all things, visible and invisible, and we are created from it, and therefore one with it, cause and effect, you know, the circumstances in our lives are often outward expressions of our beliefs,
right.
Attraction. That's a big one. I'm going to skip that for the moment. And then circulation
and
release.
Because sometimes we're attracted to the wrong things. Be careful with that one.
It's like I'm thinking, I'm kind of treading lightly here, that the law of attraction, I tend to think in tendencies, like, we tend to attract things. Like attracts like. What we dwell on tends to appear in our experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's circulation and release. Like energy is always in motion. And we either interfere with the flow of energy by being, you know, afraid, or we encourage it by being positive and sharing our time and energy and talents. And then another spiritual influence is resurrection. And I love to think about that idea. You know, energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many different ways to get what we need. So those are the spiritual laws that I like to look at. And when I'm having a hard time, sometimes I just remind myself possible spiritual influences in a situation. And it really helps me. It helps me get some clarity.
You know, I'm going to give you another little quotation from Stardust. Because she's such a character. She says that some things have a very peculiar way of going right. They start out looking like a disaster. So if you can think about, no matter how terrible something is, what is the best thing that could come out of this?
Yeah.
For example, someone came to me and says I was fired from a job, and I said, you know, it's interesting. Think about the possibility mm-hmm. that you might be offered something fantastic that you would never be in place for. You'd never be in the place to meet the person that would offer you this if you had that job, if you were stuck in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like to, regarding being fired, I like to look at metaphors. And what does fire do, you know? A fire mm-hmm. in a forest clears mm-hmm. out all the underbrush, you know, and fire can purify.
Yeah.
And, it's like, so I suggest people
on 9/11, I went to visit a friend of mine, and there was a fellow standing literally in a state of shock, leaning on the wall out in the hall mm-hmm. of her building. And I looked at him, and I said, are you okay? He said, I was fired last Tuesday. I worked on the 102nd floor of the World Trade Center.
Ooh. Oh, I just got goose pimples. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So he was not in the building. He wasn't in the building.
No. If he hadn't been fired, he would. It would have been the end of it.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow.
So there you are. And so I think a lot of times it's the way we define things
mm-hmm.
that sets them in concrete.
Yes. Yeah.
And the thing that I love about you is that you literally look at yourself, your surroundings, and the situations that you are in, and you sort of think your way all the way around them and come out mm-hmm. with a whole different perspective. And this is sensational. This is what I think is so special about you and everything that you've said. I find that this capacity to literally examine every aspect of what's going on is amazing.
Mhm. Mhm. I know, it's the way I love to do things. And occasionally I have to suspend that too. Like If I'm having one of those days where nothing is going right, which just means it's not going the way I think they should,
right?
You know, something, quote, bad will happen, and then I'll stub my toe, and then the printer will stop working, and it seems like on one of those days, things just kind of snowball. And mm-hmm. in those cases, I don't even try to figure it out. I just take a really deep breath, and I remind myself of all the days that have gone well. And that really helps. And then, you know, I might even take an hour off or so, or, you know, the rest of the day, and to say, okay,
just
let it go. One thing I like that Byron Katie said, and boy, I think about that a lot, she suggests that we don't argue with reality. You know, when what happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's look at the reality of what's going on. And that has been a real lifesaver for me on occasion. It's like, you know, when I'm tending to beat myself up about I should have done this or I should have done that or I'm feeling guilty or whatever. It's like, just stop. Take a deep breath, you know. But mm-hmm. I do like to think. I love to. Someone asked me once, what do you do in San Francisco for fun?
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure I disappointed them. I said, I think. You know, I think about thinking. Mm-hmm. And, well, that just was not what they wanted to hear. They wanted to hear that I went to a certain club or bar.
Fisherman's Wharf, you know. Or you went to the top of the...
yeah.
What's that famous hotel near the top of the... What is it?
I know what you're talking about, but I can't... St. Mark? I don't know. I can't remember.
I think that's probably it. Mm-hmm.
When I was, you know, going to school in San Francisco, I was living on a tight budget, and the greatest entertainment I could have was just thinking about thinking and then writing about it.
Uh-huh. It
doesn't get better than that.
Uh-huh. It's fantastic.
It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. No, it really doesn't. But so if you could, I know you've written books, and you have about 4 books. Would you like to tell us about the books that you did write, that you've already written? Besides,
Verity
Incorporated.
Several of those I wrote a long time ago. There's Time Management Made Easy, and we're going to reissue that one of these days, and that was in print for years. And then Test Your Entrepreneurial IQ, and we want to reissue that. So right now, there's Spirit Incorporated, which is, I just brought out a Kindle version, and you can also get it in paperback through Amazon.
It's called
Spirit Incorporated, How to Follow Your Spiritual Path from 9 to 5. And then the 3 that I have that I'm so excited about that I'm going to be bringing out this year, hopefully all 3 this year, but maybe 1 next year. I tried my hand at a young adult novel, and it's a dark psychological thriller for mature teenagers about a group of teens that solve a murder mystery using a mind reading machine. And it's based on a voice analysis technique that is actually being used in investigations today. So that was, I'm very excited about that. It's called The Insiders, because they go into the psyches. They go into people's psyches and discover their secrets. So, and some people don't want their secrets discovered, and so these teenagers end up running for their lives and for their sanity. So that's that. And hopefully that'll be out maybe in February next month. And then the next one is called 6 Feet Above.
Okay.
And it's a true story. The true story of growing up the daughter of a mortician.
Okay.
And
that's great.
It is quite a ride. Quite a ride. And
that's great.
It even won a prize for a memoir in progress. And I worked on that off and on for years. And every time I thought it was ready, then I would have some other insights. And so I have finally got the last piece for that. I'm working on the last chapter. And then the other one, there's one more. It's called Patter. Now, patter is the talk in which magicians engage to hold your attention, to divert your attention away from how they're actually doing a trick. So they are manipulating you, and they're talking to you, looking you in the eyes, talking to you. And I thought, that's interesting. I wonder if I could expand that to the entire world. And so I started looking at all the ways that the world distracts us from the truth of who we are inside. And so that was, each chapter in the book, Patter, is based on a principle that a magician uses to create an illusion.
You know, in music, there's the patter song. which was very well often used in the Gilbert and Sullivan
song. Oh, Patter song? Operetta,
you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I something just occurred to me as you were talking that often patter is the current sort of the canned stories that we throw out when in lieu of conversation.
Yeah, let me think about that. Yes. Interesting. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So patter is just a whole lot more than the magicians. You've got some more stuff to do on that one, I think.
Oh, I know. Well, I got interested in that when I went out with this guy who was just phenomenally intuitive. And this was in San Francisco a long time ago. And I was just astonished at how accurate he was always. And then one day I realized that he was a magician and he was a mentalist. And he was actually using illusion to trick people. And so that started me thinking, you know, our whole relationship had been built on patter. You know, he didn't say he was highly intuitive or psychic or anything. He just did his thing and let me assume it, you know. And so that was what started me thinking about patter. And I realized that even the things we say to ourselves, some of our negative self-talk is a kind of patter.
Yes, yeah.
That distracts
exactly.
us from the truth of who we are.
That's great.
Those are the three books that I am going to be bringing out.
That's fantastic. Well, could you give everybody your website and for them to get in touch with you?
Yes. My website is winningspirit.com. It's winningspirit.com. The speed reading book, it's an e-book, PDF file based on the course that I taught for years, is speedreadingexpert.com. Speedreadingexpert.com. It's a transcript of the actual course that I taught for years and years. And
let's see,
Spirit Incorporated is available on Amazon. I think, did I use my middle initial, Kathleen L. Hawkins? That'll take you to the Kindle version.
Oh, good.
And then the ones that, the three I mentioned, The Insiders, 6 Feet Above, and Patter, I will mention those on my website eventually, you know, winningspirit.com.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And I'm busy. I think about it, I am a busy person in my head. I am busy in my head, always.
Yes, you are. I can hear that. I'm wondering if you could have just a couple of minutes now to talk to people and tell them what you would, if they came to you and say, well, what should I do? You know, how can I make my life better? What would you tell them?
Well, I think, you mean in relation to their jobs or just every day? It's the same
Anything.
Thing, basically.
Absolutely, because job and life, job is a life, part of your life.
Yeah, I would suggest look for the spiritual influences in any experience. And those are the ones that I mentioned, unity, cause and effect, attraction, circulation and release, resurrection. I try not to have, one thing I tell people is make a spiritual response your first response, not your last resort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been times in my life where I've just been frantic about stuff, and then I finally thought, well, I'm going to see if being spiritual will help. Why not start with that? And that will help you gain a clarity. And one thing, you know, if somebody is bothering you or a situation is annoying you, you've heard of the saying, the good advice, count to 10 before you do anything? Well, what I tell people is count to 10. That could be the number number 10. It could be 10 minutes. It could be 10 days. Or it could be 10 weeks. Whatever it takes for you to calm down and, you know, take a deep breath, get centered, and think your way through it spiritually. And in Spirit Incorporated, I have a lot of different things about, you know, negotiating and communicating and how to deal with difficult behavior. And so it really covers a lot of life circumstances. And I've thought back over my own life, and whenever I've had a knee-jerk reaction, you know, things have not gone well. So
I what just popped into my head was think of 10 different ways to describe this situation and think of 10 different ways to handle it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and so count to 10. It can be what you said, 10 different ways to handle it, 10 different
I
ways
I have a feeling
to
that was Stardust.
Describe.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, hi. Do you ever call her Star? Hey, Star.
No.
Hi, Star.
I call her, always call her Stardust. She's she is very particular about her name.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So yes,
well,
you have to do is call her name 3 times, and you'll probably hear from her.
Well, I have a feeling she's been on this call, so that's nice.
She has indeed. She has indeed. So
yeah,
I
really like your show. It's so uplifting and much needed. You know, this your show is very helpful and inspiring.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I thank you for being so clear and so open and so giving in this hour we've had together. And what we usually do, since we're literally out of minutes now, is we usually end with a guided imagery for a moment. Would you like to participate with that?
I would.
Okay. Take a very deep breath. Tighten your body, like your whole body is a fist, even your scalp and your toes and your belly button, and then collapse like a rag doll. And feel that first breath that you take as if you are floating on it, as if you are riding a wave. Just float in, and as you exhale, let go of anything that is getting in, coming between you and what you want. Take another deep breath and float in deeper, very deep, and let go of all those ideas that are getting in your way. Let them go. Just blow them away. Take another deep breath. Floating in through the layers of consciousness into that deep, wonderful, safe place where everything is there for you. Everything is perfect. Nothing can possibly get in the way or harm you in any way, and just be there and just absorb that wonderful feeling. And know the knowings. And be that wonderful person that you really are. And now take another deep breath, stretch a little bit, and coming back totally refreshed and recharged and ready to go out there and think some more and do some more and be some more. And open your eyes and stretch and wiggle your fingers and toes. And hello.
Wow, was that nice. Thank you. Ooh, I'm just floating now.
Oh, wow. That's marvelous. Well, you keep in touch and let us know what the next exciting things you're doing. I can't wait.
I will.
And from
now,
and now from now, all I can say is love and light.